Shalom. Welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for David Eliyahu Chai Ben Nina Miriam Chaya and Avraham Ben Batsheva and Claire Weissman. Before we get to our many questions this week from our great JTFers, I want to speak about the Israeli Air Force attacking Iranian missiles in Syria that were on their way to the Hezbollah terrorists. First of all, I want to say that this is a very critical and dangerous time for Israel because Muslim terrorist Iran really is getting very close to developing nuclear bombs. And that creates a real threat of a nuclear holocaust against both the United States and Israel. It is essential, something we have said for 20 years now, it is essential that either the United States Air Force or the Israeli Air Force destroy Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. It can still be done, and it would set back the Iranians at least a number of years and would be a big blow to their program if the U.S. Air Force or the Israeli Air Force went in and destroyed their program from the air. And it can be done. Now, I don't believe there is a realistic chance that the United States Air Force is going to do that at this point. I do not believe that the Muslim anti-Semite Barack Hussein Obama is going to destroy Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. I just don't believe it. So that means we basically have to do everything we can to try to convince the Israeli government, which is a pathetically weak government, to take this action, to finally do the one sane thing that any sane, normal people would do for survival. Taking out this nuclear bomb-making program from Iran is the only sane course that Israel could take. And it's something Israel should have done years ago, and something we have been urging for 20 years. And so we have to do everything we can to convince the Israeli government to take this action. Now, we are the address in Israel. We are the movement and the group that has consistently spoken about this issue for 20 years. We've done hundreds of videos on this subject. We have several million views on all of our videos on YouTube and on Flicks, and as the Israeli media has reported, many Israelis have seen our videos. That doesn't mean that several million Israelis have seen our videos. We have several million views. It doesn't mean several million Israelis have seen our videos, because in some cases you could have one Israeli Jew who's seen 100 of our videos, so he counts as 100 views. But I do believe that that means that at least, at the very least, hundreds of thousands of Israeli Jews have been exposed to our videos and have seen our videos. And many of our videos have been about this subject because it's a subject of life and death for the people of Israel. It's also a tremendous threat to the United States. For Israel, it is literally an existential threat. It's a threat to Israel's very survival. And we, for 20 years, have been the one consistent, uncompromising voice saying military action must be taken by the Israeli Air Force to destroy Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. You've seen some of our videos in English that speak about this subject. For every video we've done in English on this subject, we've done many more videos in Hebrew. In Hebrew, we've done many more videos on this particular topic than what we've done in English. And you've seen, even in English, we've spoken about this subject extensively. And so many Israelis know that when it comes to the subject of the Iranian nuclear threat and this whole threat of a holocaust, God forbid, against the people of Israel, that we are the voice on the right that has been pushing this issue and pushing this agenda. And we've influenced the debate, by the way. We, our movement in Israel, despite the fact that we have a pathetic budget that's a joke, and despite all the disadvantages we have, we have influenced the debate in Israel, because on the right, there were people on the right, people in Judea and Samaria, and various people even who called themselves Kahanis, like Mikhail Ben-Ari, who were saying Israel should not strike Iran, who were saying that if they strike Iran, Bibi Netanyahu and the Likud are going to use a strike against Iran to make themselves look tough, and then after they do that, they're going to look so tough that they're going to be able then to create a Palestine state. They're going to say, we wouldn't endanger Israel. Look what we did. We saved Israel from the Iranian nuclear threat. So we don't have to, so you can trust us to create a Palestinian state. Even though there is no Palestine, there are no Palestinians, and the creation of a so-called Palestine state would be national suicide for Israel. But the danger of having a Netanyahu or Likud government do this to Iran and then have a tough image in the eyes of Israelis and then be able to come to the Israeli people and say, hey, look what we did. You see, we're protecting your security. You don't have to fear anything. Trust us. Let's throw the Jews out of Judea and Samaria. Let's create a Palestine state. That is a danger that really does exist. And that's a danger that convinced many people on the right to oppose Israel taking out Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. And that is crazy. Because even though there's a threat of that happening, we must destroy this Iranian nuclear bomb-making threat, separate and distinct from the issue of Judea and Samaria. After we've taken care of separate from taking care of that issue, then of course we also have to educate the people of Israel about how essential it is that Judea and Samaria, the heartland of biblical Israel, remain in the hands of the Jewish people. That's absolutely essential, and that it is suicide, national suicide, to create a Palestine state. And that there's a threat of a Holocaust from a Palestine state, just as there's a threat of a Holocaust from Iranian nuclear bombs. But that doesn't mean, because there's a threat of a Holocaust from a Palestine state, that doesn't mean we should say, okay, we're not going to worry about the threat of a Holocaust from Iranian nuclear bombs, because that's also a big threat. Michael Ben-Ari, who called himself a Kahanist, who was elected to the Knesset, and who was making speeches saying that Israel should not strike Iran, and that this is all nonsense, and that it would be the stupidest thing for Israel, the stupidest thing Israel could do would be to strike Iran. This type of insane behavior was actually creating pressure on Netanyahu from the right not to strike Iran. So we got involved, and in this past election, we really went after Michael Ben-Ari on this subject. We played tapes of him making these stupid statements, and we said this is insane, and this shows you've learned nothing about from the Holocaust. We have a nation like Iran with 75, 80 million people threatening to perpetrate a Holocaust against the Jewish state, and you're going to give them the ability, the nuclear capability, to carry out their threat? You're going to say you're not worried about their threat of perpetrating a Holocaust when you're going to put in their hands the ability to carry out that threat? That's showing you learned nothing from what happened 70 years ago in to European Jewry. When dictators and vicious, hateful people threatened to carry out a Holocaust, the one lesson we should have learned from the murder of 6 million Jews is that we do not ignore threats like that. We do not ignore threats like that. And so we went after Michael Ben-Ari, and it really hurt him in the election. And he was on the defensive. And now I've even seen one of their people in their party now saying we should attack Iran. I mean, they really switched their position. They really did a 180-degree switch because of us. We went after them. I mean, we were the only ones that went after everybody that said that you shouldn't attack Iran. I mean, we really went after them in the election. We went after them with videos. And it had an impact. It had an impact. Now we've created pressure on the right for an attack. Whereas Netanyahu was actually ironically being pressured on the right by stupid people, people on the so-called right, stupid people were actually pressuring him not to attack. Now the opposite is happening. And that is because of our movement and our videos. That's because of us. No one else was raising this issue and speaking about it except for us. We were the only ones who uncompromisingly said all along, Israel must take out this Iranian nuclear bomb-making program. No ifs, ands, or buts. And even if Netanyahu tries to exploit it to create a Palestine state, even if he tries to do that, that doesn't mean we shouldn't get rid of the Iranian nuclear threat. We still have to get rid of the Iranian nuclear threat, and we'll deal. Then we'll deal with the threat of creating a Palestine state, but we're not going to do one at the expense of the other. We're not going to have one threat of a Holocaust except the Holocaust from one direction in order to prevent the Holocaust from the other direction. That's ridiculous. We're going to fight against all threats. The threat of a Palestine state, the threat of a nuclear Iran are both threats of Holocaust, and we have to fight against both of them, and both of them have to be fought against uncompromisingly. That was our message in our videos, and that message did resonate with rank-and-file right-wing Israelis. And so now, on the right, the pressure is on Netanyahu to attack. And that, again, that's a big turnaround from where it was. If not for our movement, that would not be the case. If not for our movement, that was not going to be the situation. So we've had an impact on this debate. This movement, the JTF in Hebrew, Hayamin Hamiti, has influenced the debate, from the right at least, on Iran and has influenced it in a meaningful way. Now, this attack on Iranian missiles in Syria that were going to be handed over to the Hezbollah terrorists. The problem with this is, if this is done instead of striking Iran, that would be disastrous. Because as much as Hezbollah is a threat to Israel, and Hezbollah is a threat, they have tens of thousands of missiles. They are a threat to Israel on Israel's northern border. But as much as they're a threat to Israel, they're not 1/1000th of the threat that Iran would be with nuclear bombs. Because Hezbollah, with conventional missiles, would never pose a threat of a Holocaust. They could do damage. They could murder Jews, God forbid, and they did in the last war. They could murder Jews. They could cause problems. They could paralyze. They could paralyze much of Israel with their missile attacks from the north. But they cannot. They cannot perpetrate a Holocaust using conventional missile attacks. Iran with nuclear bombs can perpetrate a Holocaust, God forbid. Therefore, Iran's threat is 1,000 times worse. And we cannot allow this attack to satisfy people that the government is dealing with the security issues and the security problems. That's why our movement is so essential. People right away are running to us. They run to us and ask us. You have no idea how many people have come to us and asked us, what do you think of this? What is this? What's your opinion on this now? Yeah, people know that we're the address on this issue, that we're the ones that have been pushing this particular issue for all of these years. They know that we've been consistent on this issue. Israel must destroy Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. If that Muslim Jew-hating pig in the White House likes it or doesn't like it, we don't care. Israel must take out Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. And by the way, right now, Obama is applauding what Israel did in Syria, because Obama himself made a remark about red lines, and so he's hoping that this will get him out of his own rhetorical statements that he made about Syria using chemical weapons and red lines. It's a whole complicated thing that's not really relevant to us right now. But while he's telling Israel it's okay to strike at Iranian conventional missiles in Syria, he is still pressuring Israel not to strike at Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. He's still doing that. He's still doing that, and he's even doing it openly through the Israeli media. You don't see it because it's in the Hebrew media. But it's front page news in Israel, and it's big news in Israel that the Obama administration is constantly sending out messages and information to try to convince the people of Israel and convince the politicians not to strike Iran. Israel should ignore that, and Israel should strike. And so, and we've been told, by the way, that Obama has said that Israel has a right to defend themselves, that Israel has a right to defend herself, and that if Israel defends herself that against Iran, that the United States would support that. That's the message we've been given, you know. Which, of course, I don't know if that's true, and I certainly don't trust Obama. I know that he's an anti-Semite. The only reason Obama would be against a nuclear Iran, if he is, the only reason he would be against it is because Saudi Arabia and the rest of the Muslim world are also afraid of a nuclear Iran. Because it takes a Muslim to know a Muslim. These Muslim cutthroats know that their fellow Muslims in Iran are crazy enough to use these nuclear bombs. And so the Saudis and the Persian Gulf Arabs and the Egyptians and the Turks and all these other Muslims are terrified of a nuclear Iran. And so because of that, it's possible that Obama would want to prevent a nuclear Iran. But Right now, in terms of actual action, I don't care what his position technically on paper is. His actual actions right now are pressuring Israel not to strike. And so Israel should ignore that. Israel can easily ignore that. Israel does not have to worry about Obama. Screw Obama. Screw that Muslim Jew hater. Israel should do what they have to do to survive. This is a matter of survival, and that's our message in our videos. And that's what we're telling the people of Israel. That's what we've been telling them for 20 years under all the different presidents and all the different prime ministers. That has been our consistent message. And we're going to continue to do that. And I'm telling you, we really have influenced the debate in that respect. I think you can be proud of our movement in that respect. We really have influenced the debate because we've been consistent. And we've presented facts and truth to the people of Israel, and what we're saying makes sense, it's logical, and we are pushing from the right to get action in order to save Israel from a nuclear holocaust. And this is just an example of why our movement is so important. If you love Israel and the Jewish people, our movement is so important. It is so essential that we reach as many Israeli Jews as possible with our message. It's also important that our English movement reach people around the world as well. But it is so important that our Hebrew movement reach as many Israeli Jews as possible. It is so essential. It's literally a matter of survival. And I really do believe we're influencing the debate, at least. What will happen in the end? I'm not a prophet, so I can't tell you. I can't tell you what will happen in the end, but you know that at least we're not going to compromise, and we're going to keep pushing, we're going to keep fighting. And if you believe and agree with us that this is essential that this be done, then you also will want to reach as many people. And by the way, Israeli politicians have seen our videos on this. Israeli politicians, Israeli cabinet ministers. You remember the article we showed you in Hebrew? There was an article that quoted Israeli television producers and Israeli Knesset members saying that they had seen our videos. They do look at our videos. Because whatever slice of the Israeli population that would want to watch our videos, obviously people that are already involved with politics and public affairs are most interested. And so they've seen our videos. And that's very important. Our message is very, very important. And it's reaching people. We've got to keep the pressure up because this is such an essential time in the history of the Jewish people, the state of Israel, and the world. It's an essential, essential time. And with the limited resources, you know, we're throwing everything into the fight with the limited resources we have. And I think that the results are that, you know, we have influenced things to a certain degree. And we're going to keep trying to influence things as much as possible. Again, in order to wake the people of Israel up and get them to do the only sane thing possible. You can help. You can make a difference. You can help. You can help, first of all, by promoting our English and Hebrew videos. When you see that we put on the forum English and Hebrew videos, because you see us constantly uploading English and Hebrew videos, when you see us doing that, help us promote those videos. Help us promote the videos on Facebook and on YouTube. Help us by commenting, liking, favoriting, mirror the videos, share the videos. Do all the things that you can do to make sure that those videos have as much exposure as possible. And by the way, even though when we have the Hebrew videos, even if you don't speak Hebrew, that doesn't matter. That your comments and your likes and sharing and all the other things that you do on Facebook and on YouTube, all the things that you do will still promote the videos in the search engines. Even if you make comments in English on a Hebrew video, that doesn't matter. That's fine. That's perfectly fine. We need your help with that. And we need your help on our forums. Good threads on the forums, good posts on the forums will attract more people. We have a lot of visitors. You see that every day we have a lot of visitors on the forums. You see that a lot of people visit the forums, but for some reason, you know, human nature is apathetic, especially in our day and age. So many people visit our forum and don't sign up and don't get active, but they like to read. They like to see what's on the forum. You know that we have many people like that. And so it's important that we have good quality threads and interesting posts on the forum. Same thing on our Facebook pages. Go to our Facebook pages and post interesting comments. You could go also to my personal page, Chaim Ben Pesach, on Facebook, my personal page, and join and post interesting comments. It helps. It helps. And most importantly, we need financial support. That's always been our big downfall. And it was, you know, it was the reason why they got away with banning Rabbi Meir Kahana. If he had had a big budget, they wouldn't have gotten away with doing it. He would have been able to create enough of an uprising by the people. And I'm talking about a law-abiding uprising by the people, a lawful uprising, that they would never have gotten away with what they did to Rabbi Kahana, banning him and preventing him from running again when he had so many supporters. Money has always been our downfall, and it's still our downfall. But every Every contribution we get makes a difference. You're making a difference with us. It does make a difference. It does help. And so I want to thank the wonderful JTFers who send us checks and money orders and cash donations to our post office box through the regular mail. Every donation makes a big difference. God bless you and your family in this world and in the next. And the people, equally as important, the people who donate online with their credit cards, they go to jtf.org, which is our English main page. There's a donate button on top, or they go to hayamin.org, which is our Hebrew main page with donate button on top, and they can conveniently donate with a credit card. God bless all the great JTFers that make it possible for us to reach people with the truth at a time when we're trying to save Israeli Jews from another Holocaust, God forbid. And by the way, as you all know, there's a real danger that the Holocaust will be against Americans, God forbid. I mean, if Iran has nuclear bombs and and terrorist groups get their hands on nuclear bombs through the Iranians who sponsor these terrorist organizations, I don't have to tell you that the dream come true for them would also be to murder millions of Americans. So it's a tremendous danger, and I know that you, our great JTFers, agree with our message, and you understand the importance of it. You understand the insanity that this has gotten to this point, that it's gotten this far and gone on this long, and that nothing has happened. You understand the insanity of them not attacking Iran after all this time, and Iran is getting so close, and they're allowing this to happen? It's insane. Because you, our great JTFers, understand it, we appeal to you to help us and to do everything you can to promote this message. All right. And again, I think you can be very proud of our movement, because we really have done, I think, a good job of influencing the debate with a very limited budget. Okay, now let's get to our questions from our great JTFers, and we start out with Da Vinci, our good friend, who writes, and I quote, "Lady Gaga and Pink are both obsessed with gay marriage," quote unquote. "Until the 1980s, almost none of the artists cared about this subject. Why this change?" unquote. Great question. And you know, and it really is a very, very good question, Da Vinci, and very, very perceptive of you to see this. Did you know that until the 1960s, the homosexual organizations, all the organizations that were trying to promote homosexuality and that were in favor of the homosexual agenda, in the 1960s, they actually said they are opposed to gay marriage and that they will never, never suggest gay marriage. It was considered to be so crazy that the official homosexual organizations were all against it and swore that they would never, never ask for something like that. It was just considered to be too crazy. I don't even remember the names of these homosexual organizations, but their official spokesmen were against it. You know, just to show you how much times have changed, in the 1960s, there were homosexual organizations saying that homosexuality was a mental illness. They themselves were saying it was a mental illness. They preferred to be regarded as mentally ill and not criminals, because most Americans considered them to be evil criminals, sinful evil criminals. And so they said, wait a minute. You know, this is a mental problem. This should be treated as a disease. This shouldn't be treated as a crime. So the homosexual organizations were actually saying homosexuality was a mental illness. They themselves were saying this until the 1960s. That's just amazing. Then, if you go through the 1970s and 1980s, they were not pushing gay marriage. Nobody was speaking about gay marriage. It was not a serious issue. They started, to a certain degree, in the 1990s, speaking about the issue. And finally, you know, in recent years, it became the premier issue. But it was very unpopular until a few years ago. Barack Hussein Obama was against it when he ran in just 2008. Barack Hussein Obama, Hillary Rodham Clinton, and all of the Democrat candidates running for president, every single Democrat candidate running for president in 2008 was against gay marriage in 2008. Look at how far we've come. Look at how terrible the decline of American culture and of Western society. Look how far we've come. Our argument is very simple. When all the psychiatrists and all the psychologists and everyone else said in the 60s and before then that it's a mental illness, they were right. And when the homosexual organizations themselves admitted that it was a mental illness in those days, they were right. But, you know, now we've gotten to the point where the more degenerate and the more evil, that's what they promote. They promote it more and more and more, and we see a constant decline in Western civilization. And this is the end of the United States. If gay marriage becomes widespread and an accepted thing, America is finished. God will destroy the United States. God will destroy any country that has that type of mentality. That's for sure. That we see for sure throughout history. The Bible tells us that, and history proves that that is true. Thank you, Da Vinci. And now we go to the Great Pyramid Head fan who writes, and I quote, Dear Chaim, why does Rebecca Black get tens of millions of views on YouTube when clearly she sounds like a robot, unquote? Okay, well, you know, she's one out of many that she... I'm going to ask another question that is related. How is it that a Korean guy who has no talent creates a silly dance called the Gangnam Style, or whatever it is? I think it's called Gangnam Style. And he has not tens of millions of views, but over 1.5 billion views. Billion with a B. And for those who have affirmative action educations, which is not JTFers. JTFers are well-educated. But for those who are listening to this program who may have an affirmative action education, 1 billion is 1,000 millions. A billion is 1,000 millions. This guy has over 1.5 billion views, the most views of any video in history. And he's a crazy guy with no talent, singing some crazy song and dancing some crazy dance that makes no sense. And he has 1.5 billion views. And look at the, and by the way, after that, he did more videos and he got hundreds of millions of views on the subsequent videos he did. And this is just one out of many. American society and Western society and Israeli society and the whole world are going nuts. They're going crazy. People with zero talent are becoming the trailblazers of Western civilization. They're becoming the ones who teach us what we're supposed to do in Western culture now. It's madness. It's just complete madness, and it has to change if we want to save the world from a terrible fate. Thank you, Pyramid Head fan. And now we go to our good friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim. What do you think about the discovery of a part of one of the planes that hit the World Trade Center near that mosque, unquote? It's interesting. It's an interesting observation. I don't know. I don't know what to make out of that. I think it's probably a coincidence. Of course, Joe, I understand what you're saying, but I think it's probably a coincidence. I don't think the mosque got their hands on a part of the plane, you know, that hit the World Trade Center. But what Joe is referring to, of course, is the Victory Mosque that's being built on near Ground Zero, which is a disgrace that's spitting on the graves of 3,000 innocent Americans who were murdered by these Muslim terrorist maniacs. A disgrace. And near this mosque, right next to the mosque, they found a part of the plane that hit the World Trade Center. So maybe, I don't know, maybe there's a message there from God. Maybe there's another warning there from God to remind us of what a disgrace it is, what an absolute desecration it is of the thousands of innocent people who were murdered that we have a mosque being built there. The Muslims always build mosques at the site of mass murder. When they murder infidels, they love to build a mosque there, a Victory Mosque, and that's what they're doing in Ground Zero. And we have all of these politicians like Chris Christie and Mike Bloomberg and other traitors, Barack Hussein Obama, of course, who support the building of a Victory Mosque at Ground Zero. Thank you, Joe. And now we go to the great Obama is trash, who writes, and I quote, Please give a yimach shmo to the upcoming Stalin of New York City, satanic leftist lesbian slut Christine Quinn, a possible candidate for mayor of New York this year, unquote. Well, I agree with you. Obama is trash. She is certainly, she is the lowest of the low. And, again, I have to say this, even though it's not going to hurt her politically, because New York City is very anti-religious. It's a left-wing, anti-religious city. And being a lesbian is a big advantage in New York City, actually. If you're homosexual or a lesbian or believe in perversion, New York City, that's a big plus. So politically, this actually helps her. But I mean, anyone who knows anything about history knows that God is not going to look kindly upon a city that elects as their mayor someone who is engaging in this type of behavior. It is really, really going to be a tragedy for the city of New York. And she also, by the way, just on the issues in general, she happens to be an evil left-wing swine, just in general on the issues. Thank you, Obama's trash. And now we go to our good friend Mohammed is in hell. Very appropriate name. Mohammed is in hell writes, and I quote, "Do you think it would be smart for a JTF member to host a daily Quranimal report, quote unquote, to increase popularity and direct people here on YouTube," unquote? Oh, it would be a great idea. There's only one problem. YouTube, you got to watch what you put on YouTube because YouTube removes videos. YouTube is politically correct, and they remove videos that expose too much about Islam because the Muslims complain about it. So if you just had one account and you put lots of videos on that one account to build up that one account, which of course would be great if you could build up one account, a lot of people would know to go there. It would be great if we could do that, but we can't because YouTube will take the account down. So our tactic has been, we have literally about 2,500 accounts now, all over, scattered all over YouTube. We got like 2,500 accounts. So if they take down one of our accounts or take down one of our videos, it's no big deal. It takes us 5 minutes to just put it on another account. We have so many accounts, so many unused accounts, that it's no big deal for us to put it on other accounts, to put it on multiple accounts. That's how we've dealt with YouTube's political correctness. But if you're going to do videos exposing Islam, I do think it's a good idea. I think it's a great idea. If you're going to use terms like Quranimal, they're going to remove the video. They're going to take it down. But if you do videos just exposing Islamic terrorism, you got to know what terms to use. If you say you're against Muslim terrorists, for instance, that you can say on YouTube. They're not going to take it down if you say you're fighting Islamic terrorism and Muslim terrorists. And you can say things in a way where everybody will know what you mean without actually using language that'll get YouTube to take it down. So you got to learn the tricks on how to do that. It's unfortunate that we have to do that we have this type of censorship, but that's what YouTube is. YouTube is owned by Google. Google now is recognizing a so-called Palestine state, and I mean, these are the most evil people. So this is what we're dealing with. And would I like to see something like this on a regular basis, people to be reporting on what happens in the Muslim world, instead of saying Quranimal report, which they won't allow, to say reports on Muslim terrorism or what is happening in the Muslim world, or issue if you phrase these things differently, and if you could do it on a you could do things on a daily basis, and maybe that would be great for the movement. Maybe that would bring a lot of people into the movement. It sounds like a good idea. Thank you very much. Mohammed is in hell. And now we go to our great friend Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, "Why do most modern Orthodox leaders in the U.S. tend to be politically less conservative than Haredi leaders in the U.S., while in Israel it's the opposite," unquote. Some of it just has to do with the fact that they just happen to be the modern Orthodox movement in the U.S. Rabbi Soloveitchik started it, and just the modern Orthodox movement. People like Shlomo Riskin, he's now in Israel, but he was a big influence on the movement in the U.S. Those people just generally are left-wing. For some reason, the leaders are left-wing, even though Orthodox Jews don't vote left-wing. Orthodox Jews, by the way, voted 90% for Romney. So it's one of the groups that really was solidly, that Orthodox Jews voted for Mitt Romney against Obama more than Mormons. They were more pro-Romney than the Mormons. But the modern Orthodox leaders, tend to be very cowardly and very left-wing in the U.S. The Orthodox Union, for instance, were for many years they supported the Oslo agreements, and they were against freeing Jonathan Pollard. Real cowards, real backstabbers. So we've had some Orthodox Yeshiva University wants to honor Jimmy Carter. Yeshiva University has a gay club. I mean, at an Orthodox university, Yeshiva University, they have a gay club. For years, they have a gay organization. And I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, something that blatantly is against the Torah, that is completely against the Torah, that Hashem says is an abomination, and they allow that at Yeshiva University, and now they're honoring that Nazi Jew-hating animal, Jimmy Carter, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro. So, this is, unfortunately, the leaders of the modern Orthodox movement in the U.S. are left-wing, and I think one of the reasons may be because the whole idea behind modern Orthodoxy was we can be like everybody else and still be Orthodox. In other words, we can be part of American society and be like everybody else and still be Orthodox and still be full Americans and still be Orthodox. That was one of the theories behind it. And in order to do that, they have to try to mimic the surrounding culture. So I think that's one of the reasons why they are left-wing, why the modern Orthodox in the U.S., the leadership at least, is left-wing. In Israel, on the other hand, the Orthodox movement in Israel, the what they call the knitted kippot, the knitted skull, the people that wear the knitted skull caps on their heads, they tend to be more right-wing on issues of Eretz Yisrael, on the land of Israel, and other issues because they're just more, possibly because of the influence of Harav Kook and other rabbis there that influenced them. Here you had a different strain of rabbis like Rabbi Soloveitchik. There you had a strain of rabbis that were more oriented toward Eretz Yisrael, toward the land of Israel. As far as the Haredi leaders, I don't think the Haredi leaders in the U.S. Are conservative. I don't think that at all. I really don't see that. But the Haredi leaders in Israel are left-wing for a very simple reason. That's where the money is. In order to get money for their institutions and their yeshivas, they realize that taking left-wing positions is the way to do that, and so that's why you have corrupt Haredi leaders like Shas. For the money, they've been willing to support the Oslo agreements, and they're willing to take left-wing positions. Anyway, thank you, Binyamin. And now we go to the great Eli Yitzchaki, who's also from our Hebrew forum and from Israel. Eli Yitzchaki writes, and I quote, "Is there any chance you would support a candidate from the Democratic Party over a Republican?" Unquote. Yes, I do. I support the Democrat candidate for governor of New Jersey against Chris Christie. I hate all the Democrats. I hate the Democrats. I hate the Democrat Party. It's a left-wing party. It's an evil party. It's an immoral party. It's an anti-Semitic party. I hate the Democrat Party. But we have times when there are Republicans who are actually even worse. And Chris Christie does damage on a national level that is so serious. Chris Christie was responsible for Barack Hussein. He was one of the reasons why Barack Hussein Obama was reelected. So we cannot afford to have that animal being a so-called Republican leader. Now, he's going to get reelected governor of New Jersey, but I support the Democrat candidate running against Chris Christie in New Jersey. That's just an example. It is unusual. It's very unusual for me to support a Democrat over a Republican. It's very unusual because the Democrats are so terrible. But if there is a Republican who's worse, yes, I will support a Democrat if the Republican is even worse. And Ellie also asks, "And what do you think about Louis Brandeis?" Unquote. Well, Louis Brandeis was a Supreme Court justice. He was actually the first Jewish Supreme Court justice. I don't know, I know he was certainly not as right-wing as I am. I know that he was involved with the Zionist movement and believed in the creation of a Jewish state. He died in 1941, just before the Holocaust really started, the real peak of the Holocaust. In 1941, he died. But I know he was very involved in the Zionist movement and was a supporter of the Zionist movement and the idea of a Jewish state. I don't know that much about all of his views in the Zionist movement. I've seen people write different things about him. So I just don't know enough to really give you a full answer. He did appear to be a Jew who was proud to be Jewish and who was very involved in the Zionist movement. So that's certainly a plus if his brand of Zionism was a good brand. I'm sure he was not a Zionist like we are. I'm sure he was not a Kahanist. But by the standards of Jews in those days, maybe he was I don't know. Maybe he wasn't that bad. I don't know. I don't know enough about him. Anyway, thank you, Ellie. And now we go to the great Gematria, who writes, and I quote, "Chaim HaGibor, your thought on justices, quote unquote, Hanan Meltzer and Edna Arbel, both of whom voted to reduce the sentence of the satanic slut Anat Kam." Okay. Unquote. Unquote. Anat Kam was convicted and admitted to being involved in one of the most serious spying cases against Israel. She wanted to release thousands and thousands of very sensitive Israeli military documents. She worked in the army and she worked in the Israeli news media. And she wanted to release thousands and thousands of documents from Israeli military documents that were highly classified, and make them available to Muslim terrorists and Muslim dictators and all of Israel's enemies. I would have given her the death penalty. I think she deserved the death penalty. But in any event, she wound up getting, her sentence was cut in the end by the so-called Supreme Court to only 3.5 years. Plus, she gets a third off. And that means she wound up doing about 2 years in prison. 2 years in prison for one of the most serious spy cases, one of the most damaging and serious espionage cases in the history of Israel. Because she's a leftist self-hating traitor who hates her own people, a Jewish anti-Semite. And the Supreme Court is comprised of Jewish anti-Semites. That is the true Israel. That's the true Israeli establishment. It's not the Israeli people. The Israeli people do not like that. The majority of Israelis do not like that. But those are the people that are in the establishment in Israel and that run the Israeli Supreme Court. Yimach shmam v'zichram to all of those traitors. Thank you very much, Gimatria. And now we go to our good friend Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, "I'll be visiting New York in August, and I am looking forward to meeting my fellow JTFers. What sites of Jewish interest do you recommend I see?" Unquote. That's a good question, Chicago Jew. I don't like so-called Jewish museums because they're not Jewish. They're politically correct, left-wing houses of propaganda. The only places that I would consider to be Jewish sites outside of Israel would be synagogues and yeshivas. I don't know how interested you are in seeing those, but that to me, those are sites of Jewish interest. The yeshivas, or synagogues, because the museums and the Holocaust Museum and these museums are very politically correct, very left wing. At least for me, I don't consider them to be truly Jewish. Anyway, that's my view, and I look forward to seeing you, Chicago Jew. I certainly think I speak for JTFers. I think we would love to see you. And now we go to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, "Your thoughts on Alan Keyes? Can JTF get in touch with him?" Unquote. I think Alan Keyes is a very courageous and brilliant black conservative and a true black conservative. The only thing is his basic agenda is his paid speaking schedule. He wants to make paid speeches, and that's how he makes a living. I'm not knocking it. That's what he does. And that's basically what he's interested in. That's what he's into right now. Paid speeches, paid speaking dates. If he would cooperate with us, if he'd like to work with us, we'd be happy to work with him. We'd be happy to work with him. We did have one person who was active in JTF who actually was in touch with him, who at least had dinner with him one time and used to speak to him every now and then. So we actually did have one person who was involved with him. Now, if he would want us, if he'd want to work with us or want to speak with us or want to get involved with us, we would be happy to. We'd be happy to work with him. Thank you, Dr. Dan. Good idea. And now we go to the fantastic Ruby Stars, who writes, and I quote, "What does Judaism teach about hybrids? Are they abomination or are certain ones allowed?" Unquote. Great question. I think that some of them are allowed, but many of them are forbidden. For instance, we have something called, one of the commandments is called shatnez. Shatnez means wool and linen. We're not allowed to wear wool and linen together. Now, you may ask, why not allowed to wear wool and linen together in the same article of clothing? What's the point of that? Why would it be forbidden for Jews to wear wool and linen together, to mix wool and linen in the same article of clothing? Harambam Maimonides says the reason for that is because the idolaters in ancient Egypt intentionally, deliberately, would mix wool and linen. And so to separate us and to take Jews out of that mentality, we had that commandment. To take Jews out of the mentality of the idol worshippers. So that's Harambam, that's Maimonides' view on that. But that's an example of something that's forbidden in Judaism. Even in our clothing, we're not allowed to mix certain types of clothing. Also, interbreeding of animals, which is called kilayim in Hebrew, is forbidden in Judaism. We're not allowed to interbreed animals. God created certain species. We're not allowed we're not permitted to tamper with those species. I don't know if that means, I don't think that means that we can't interbreed with dogs. You know, different types of dogs have been created. I don't think that means among animals within the same category. But if somebody, for instance, wants to interbreed two completely different species, that's something that is forbidden. Like like oxen with different types of animals with some different type of animal. That is forbidden in Judaism. That's called kilayim. If anybody wants to change certain types of plants, a lot of that is forbidden. We're not allowed to mix. We're not allowed to have mixing of different types of plants. So a lot of the genetic engineering that's going on in plants, and a lot of the things that are going on that's very controversial now in Judaism, a lot of that would be forbidden. So a great deal is forbidden. There actually are rules against that in Judaism because we believe that God created things a certain way and that God's way is the best way. That doesn't mean that there aren't other areas where we can improve, where God intentionally gave us the ability to improve on things. There are things we create. For instance, we take wheat and we turn it into bread. We take crops and we turn it into food. So we improve on things that God gave us, and that's perfectly fine, and that's encouraged. So in some areas it's encouraged, in some areas it's discouraged. And there are usually deep philosophical and ideological reasons why it's encouraged in some areas and discouraged in others. Thank you very much, Ruby Stars. And now we go to the great EB22, who writes, and I quote, "Please discuss Dubai, United Arab Emirates, as it relates to the Muslim world, Israel, and the United States," unquote. Well, Dubai, they have over 2 million residents. It's a small country, Dubai, with over 2 million people living in it. And you know what's interesting about Dubai? It's supposed to be an Arab country, and it is an Arab country, on the Arabian Peninsula. And yet over 80% of the residents of Dubai are not Arabs. Most of them are Indian. Are from India. They are non-Arab servants. They're like slaves to the Arabs. They do all the work. They're servants. Because the Arabs in Dubai live like kings. They have so much oil money from the stupid Western world that remains addicted to Arab oil when we could become independent and we could really stop all of this madness. But we give them so much oil money that the Arabs literally have millions of people that come into the Arab world to serve them as servants. They don't have to do any work. They don't have to lift a finger. Everything is done for them. They have workers who do everything for them. They have servants who take care of them from the time they wake up until the time they go to sleep. It's unbelievable because they have so much oil wealth, such massive oil, such a massive abundance of petrodollars. So over 80% of the population of Dubai are non-Arab servants of the 17 or 18% who are Arabs. They're the ones who are the masters there. Unbelievable. It's Dubai is an example, is a living example of what a bunch of fools the Western people are. What fools the world is. What fools. I mean, how can we be so insane as to transfer so much money to these vicious people who sit back, do nothing, create nothing? Even their oil, by the way, everything they do is managed by other people. They just sit on the oil and sit back and earn trillions of dollars. It's incredible. It's incredible. Why would we have a policy that is such utter madness? I hope that that gives us an insight on Dubai, and I hope that should really be our lesson that I think that we should take from Dubai, that we need complete energy independence. And we need to end oil as a valuable commodity in this world so that we could finally cripple the Muslim world once and for all. Thank you, EB22. And now we go to the great Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what is your assessment of the New York City mayoral race and the future of New York City, unquote. Well, I'm very pessimistic about the future of New York City. I mean, I just look at the neighborhoods here. I live in Queens. There are so many Muslims. Everywhere you go, Muslims, Muslims, Muslims. It's insane what's happening here. I mean, there's literally an Islamic invasion taking place in New York City and all over the country. Muslims from all over. I was in a hospital recently. A relative of mine had to be hospitalized. So I spent a lot of time in the hospital visiting. And, you know, the majority of patients in the place where I was in this hospital, it's a so-called Jewish hospital, and the majority of patients were Muslims. The majority. I've never seen anything like this. They were all Indians and Pakistanis and Arabs and all Muslims and Africans. Just completely crazy. I think New York City does not have a very bright future. And I think that the next mayor of New York will be a terrible mayor, and I think the current mayor of New York is a terrible mayor. The next mayor may be even worse. I'm not optimistic about New York City. Don't forget, the city voted 81% for Barack Hussein Obama. So you're not going to get any sanity in New York City. You're not going to get any sane results in a city like that. Thank you, Maimonides. And by the way, that doesn't mean, I just want to say, that doesn't mean that we're not going to raise our voice and we're not going to speak out. We are going to speak out. We're going to express our opinions and we're going to try to warn people and we're going to do our best. But reality is reality. New York City is one of the craziest places in the country. 81% for Barack Hussein Obama in the last election. Thank you, Maimonides. And wait, let me just make sure. Let me refresh the page. I always forget to refresh the page before I leave to see if there are any other questions. And surely enough, and I nearly lost two more questions here. Okay, I was going to end with Maimonides. I didn't refresh the page, and we have questions from Kahana Loyalist and from Ephraim Ben Noach. Kahana Loyalist writes, and I quote, Dear Chaim, could we hear a story about Rabbi Kahana Zatzal? Yes, yes we can. You know what? Because of Maimonides' question about New York City, I'm going to tell a story about Rabbi Kahana, how he started out in the JDL and what he started doing in New York City. We had a mayor in New York City who was a left-wing anti-Semite named John Lindsay, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, who really destroyed New York City. And the JDL originally started by protesting Lindsay's policies and trying to protect the Jews in the city because Jews were under attack in certain neighborhoods in the city. Jews were under attack from black Jew haters and just vicious people that wanted to prey on elderly Jews and And Jews were in danger. I mean, they were literally in physical danger. And so the JDL went into action to protect those Jews, and many times did. There was a teacher strike in 1968 in New York City, tremendous black anti-Semitism. At that time, the vast majority of the teachers were Jewish, and already the majority of the pupils were non-white. And so the Jewish teachers came under tremendous threat, and I mean, all types of threats and vicious anti-Semitism. And Rabbi Kahana and the JDL went protecting any Jewish teachers that asked for our protection. We would try to protect them. We wanted to protect them. And so we got into confrontations, and sometimes we would accompany teachers to school. We actually had cases where JDL members, where we had some tough guys who would go, and they would accompany the teachers to school. And we would accompany them into the classroom to protect them, just to let them send the message out that this teacher has protection. Originally, that was one of the things Rabbi Kahana wanted to do. Now, it was a two-track policy. On the one hand, he wanted to protect the Jews when there was actual danger against them, and to prevent the Chilul Hashem, desecration of God's name, by them being trampled upon and stomped upon by anti-Semites. But on the other hand, he always wanted to encourage them to leave and to go to Israel. So he always told them that the place for the Jewish people is in the land of Israel, but at the same time, even while they were in the United States, he would try to protect Jews when they were in danger. And JDL was very involved in that, and very involved in the plight of Jews in New York City, which really was the first issue that JDL became involved with. The first issue JDL became involved with was black anti-Semitism and the plight of Jews in New York's urban areas. Thank you, Kahana Loyalist. And now we go to the great Ephraim Ben Noach, who writes, and I quote, "I need a JTF prayer for victory over evil. I'll PM you what I'm talking about. Thank you," unquote. Absolutely, Ephraim. We certainly do pray for victory over evil, and I certainly hope that God protects you, because you are a very righteous person, and I certainly hope God blesses you and protects you and guards over you. Thank you, Ephraim. And now I'm going to do one more refresh. Nope, that's it for now. Okay, so I think I've covered the questions here. Until next week, Shalom.